I wanted to ask you about trade, and I actually had a farmer on my program before the election was over sharing his frustration he felt for the lack of substantive trade conversations that happened during the election. And I think there were, I wonder if we could shift the conversation a little bit to what people understand about whether we're talking about, I feel like the TPP was sort of the biggest trade conversation that happened in this election. So let's start with that. Can we talk about the TPP and what you think, how you think that that conversation happened during the election, if you think there was a lot of misinformation or if there was a good understanding or good conversation about it?
I think trade is a difficult issue. It gets technical quickly. There's a lot of acronyms to keep track of, a lot of other countries to keep track of. And so I think that probably addresses the, well, why wasn't there very much substantive conversation about trade? It's a hard issue to talk about in the context of campaign soundbites and debates where you have 60 seconds to answer a question or you have 30 seconds to make your point in a commercial. Seized on the buzzwords and probably didn't have a very deep understanding of trade relationships. I think there's also a big appeal in, well, you don't like the way things are now when we've had these long-standing trade relationships through NATO or NAFTA or what have you. They're problematic. That's contributing to your circumstances. I'll renegotiate them, right? There's a transactional solution that sounds straightforward, and I think that appealed to many voters.
What misunderstandings do you think there were? Do you think there were sort of, in this election, do you think there are things that you want to clear up about trade that you feel like you want to spend a minute and educate us on? I'm curious.
Educate, maybe not, but definitely trade and openness has been one of the hallmarks of the EU. You know, if you look at the figures for early this year, trade within the EU has been positive and has generated jobs, whereas trade outside the EU has contracted. So basically, EU citizens have benefited in the first part of this year in terms of job creation and wealth creation from trade amongst ourselves. So this has been positive. Also, if you look at trade, maybe just simply with the state of Illinois, there are businesses and European companies that do trade here and are creating jobs, not every day maybe, but on an ongoing basis. And that is very important at the state level and for our countries back in the EU. Trade is something that is essential to, create more growth and prosperity for our citizens. This is really a matter of common and shared understanding between the EU and the US. We really fight for open markets amongst ourselves, and we'll definitely fight for the fact that trade is and remains fair between our two countries and globally. The EU and the US have always partnered in shaping standards globally, the rules of the game for world trade, and this is something that we will continue striving for in future.
Well, it's so interesting to hear you say that, because that's kind of the exact opposite of everything that we heard during the campaign, certainly from the Trump campaign. Costas, I wonder...
To me, this campaign was fascinating when it comes to the question of trade, not just because of that, but because I always thought it was the United States that promoted the World War II order. I mean, that's what we teach our students here, you know, with the Bretton Woods Agreement, the IMF, the World Trade Organization. So the United States is traditionally a big proponent of free trade. And in fact, one of the ways in which the U.S. is perceived in other countries as, you know, is this very assertive power in favor of free trade. So seeing the two candidates of the two major parties in the United States taking positions that are anti-free trade was really fascinating to me. So the way I try to rationalize it, I try to interpret that, is that free trade has some good sides and has some bad sides. And the good side, you know, it can generate more growth, it can help economies grow, communities become more prosperous, countries become more prosperous because it creates a lot of new opportunities. But there are also people who lose from free trade, right? Because certain industries, when they're not competitive enough, they kind of wither away. Or, you know, certain operations or certain industries move to other countries where it makes more sense. And I think that's where the feelings of the electorate come in, because I think governments have not done a very good job protecting those parts of the population that have been negatively affected by free trade. So those farmers we're talking about, or the industrial workers, what potentially could happen in an alternative scenario would be governments would provide new opportunities for them, not necessarily bring the old jobs back, because that may not be possible, but help them retrain, perhaps, so they can get new jobs, or, you know, provide some type of economic assistance so they can stand on their feet and maybe they can find a new career. But I don't see, and I think especially in the United States, because of the way attitudes towards the welfare state have been shaped, I think it's politically not easy to do.
And Shamir, I wonder, as we think about, we've been spending so much time talking about Donald Trump winning, we haven't really talked about Republican control in Congress, both in the House and the Senate. And I wonder, as we look at that, where you see, as these agreements are being discussed and eventually ratified, where you think the tenor will be going in the next couple of months?
We haven't seen unified government, so Congress and the presidency controlled by the same party in a while. The Republican Party in Congress in recent years has been one that hasn't been very activist, even when they've had some opportunity to be. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how much rein they give to Trump. There will certainly be some initial legislative activity. I think things Republicans have been trying to do for years, like repeal the Affordable Care Act, for example, I think we'll see some quick action on that front. But when it comes to things that are going to take a bit longer, I mean, I think that's one of the big questions. The Republicans don't have a filibuster-proof majority.
Yeah, here I would like to note that inaction is also action, right? So doing nothing is a way of doing something. And what I expect, at least until the next midterm elections, I think there are people in the Republican Party who understand the value of free trade, but because it's such a controversial issue, my expectation is that for the next 2 years, there won't be a lot of conversations about that in Congress. I could be wrong, of course. But
do you think there'll be a lot of conversations about immigration? Wonder what everyone's thoughts are on that.
I think we'll definitely see talk. Immigration and big immigration legislation happens rarely in the U.S.
Which is why we're in this
right. I mean,
position
the 1980s
right right.
are, it's really the last time we saw big immigration policy making. And so it's an issue that resonates with the electorate on both sides. And so I expect we'll see congressmen doing things that they can claim credit for and that they can talk about back in their district. I don't know that we'll see that actually culminating in legislation or any sort of comprehensive immigration reform, at least not before 2018, before the midterm elections.
I wonder what you all think about the tone of, it was an interesting thing to me when we thought about how immigrants and refugees were sort of all put into the same conversation in this election. And I mean, it's a different conversation when you look at the American context of that versus the European one and the refugee crisis that's happening there. But I wonder who wants to kind of weigh in on their thoughts about Costas?
So I think there is a difference between immigration and trade as issues. And again, that's just my opinion about these issues. But I think there are some objective differences. The Trump administration can afford to wait on trade and not do a lot because things can just continue the way they are, even if he or, you know, the government doesn't decide to take any action on this. But with the case of immigration, it's a little different because there is constant movement of people, so they have to deal with that. There are people whose lives are affected by this policy. And I think what's interesting is that in the United States, immigration is a big electoral issue. It's an issue that can win votes on both on the Republican side and the Democratic side. So my sense is that, you know, Trump administration would like to make a move on that front. I don't think that the refugees are going to be such a big issue in the U.S. context as in the European context, because if we accept this legal division between migrants and refugees, so refugees fleeing political situations, migrants usually leave their home countries for economic reasons, I think the United States deal, and again, there's disagreement about whether it's a legitimate distinction, but legally they are different. And I think that the U.S. deals more with economic migrants, where government has more discretion to allow entry or not. While in Europe, the debate is mostly about refugees. And refugees are covered by a specific legal status. There is a convention, a United Nations convention, that ties the government's hands. And so they're dealing with the problem of refugees a little bit more complicated. What I'm trying to say is that here in the United States, for the Trump administration, it's easier to make a move and do something about immigration, since this immigration here involves primarily economic migrants, than for some European governments who have to deal with refugees primarily.
I wanted to ask all of you, and I want to ask particularly the two of you, Shamira and Kostas, what kind of questions have your students come into class with this week? Because I imagine there's been a lot of conversation in class about the election and implications.
Of course, the why were the polls wrong, and you know, why didn't the media get this right? There's been a bit of that. In one of my classes, we've been studying voter turnout in particular, and so there have been a lot of questions about which demographics did and didn't turn out, whether things like states that allow for same-day registration, whether they saw higher or lower mm-hmm. voter turnout. A lot of that is still to be determined.
Was it a surprise to you that we saw, at least initially, that we're seeing that voter turnout was so low?
Yes, in part because if you looked at a lot of local news stories during
well, and
the
early
day,
voting totals were so high.
Were so high. So early right. voting was high, and local news stories during the day and even into the evening were like record voter turnout.
Well, I have to say, in my defense, that's exactly what all the clerks said to me.
Right.
So I asked yeah. them on the program, and they said, we're seeing record turnout. And so when the clerk yeah. of elections says that, that's kind of what you go with.
Yeah, and I think it only became clear later that voter turnout is actually down quite a bit from 2012 and 2008 for sure.
Mm-hmm. Kostas, what about you in terms of questions?
I think this election has been good for teaching politics to students because we can really illustrate certain things that they would normally hear and there's just yawn and you know.
Like what?
So one of the things that I've always tried to explain, which is one of the technical things about politics, is electoral rules and how they matter. And I'm sure, Shamira, you do that quite a bit. So having an electoral college versus having a proportional representation system versus having, you know, a majoritarian plurality system. So students really can understand exactly what that means and what implications it has. It's a point that's very difficult to make to students sometimes, is the symbolic aspect of politics. And that's what I get from the students. They try to understand, for example, why Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, people have reactions to them that are very emotional. I mean, usually most voters don't read all the details of their policy.
They're not
positions.
Reading their positions on
right.
the TPP,
they
and
are,
that's
they,
determining
exactly,
how they're voting.
Right. So they are usually reacting emotionally to the candidates and to policies. And that's hard to explain. And I think that's something that people, because of these particular candidates, felt very often both of them were presented as caricatures. So they represented an emotional reaction, or they caused an emotional reaction. And so that's something that students, I hope, and some of them are in the audience, sort of understand, they begin to understand that institutions are important, policies are important, but there's this whole aspect, the more emotional side of politics, that's important.
Another set of questions I've been getting focuses more on what are the civil and human rights implications of this? And this is an unknown, but this is an election that we heard a lot about identity. All sorts of identities and what we're going to do with groups of people who are classified based on sexual orientation or race, ethnicity, religion. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty and some concern, right, about what does this election outcome mean for various civil rights protections that in some cases we've taken for granted for years now. And are we going to be seeing big policy changes, perhaps especially with changes in the Supreme Court?
Well, and I even think apart from policy changes, just individual expression, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we saw after Brexit, I saw a Guardian report about hate crimes and the rise. I think there was about a 30% increase in the immediate Brexit vote. And certainly we've seen in the past 24 hours across the U.S., even on this campus, different people expressing concern, saying that there have been racial attacks, there have been conversations, and I wonder how much that to. I'm curious your thoughts on, and Kostas, again, I guess maybe that's a little bit of a parallel I was thinking about as well between sort of an American Brexit, if this is an American Brexit or not. But I wonder what you all think about those social and cultural implications of, and I think you're right, Shamira, it is around identity, right? And I guess the question I would want to ask all of you guys is ultimately, are we facing questions of who's an American or who's a European? Do you think that's really what we're really talking about here?
Well, what's interesting is when a campaign or an election revolves around identity, it becomes very personal. Because identity is not like an economic issue. It's not a trade issue. It's something personal. We have identities, and different people have different identities. So when identity, whether somebody is African-American or a woman or, you know, Muslim, when that becomes part of a campaign, that becomes personal to the person who, to the voter. And so then the reaction is also personal, and it's... there's something about, and I think that has something to do with the reaction to immigration. It humanizes politics in a way, and we tend to think of it as having a good effect, but sometimes it can have what we would call a negative effect, because we can be both nice to other human beings, but also we feel comfortable being not nice to other human beings. And so when there are questions of identity, and I'm thinking about my identity against somebody else's, that becomes very personal, and because the recipient of my admiration or hatred is another person, I can express it more easily than if I'm dealing with a corporation or with an abstract trade issue. So I think that's what, to me, explains this record. So if it was just about trade, I wouldn't expect these personal attacks. But because identity was such a big part of the campaign, that's what causes this reaction.